Welcome to the Business Breakfast on Jazz FM with Oanda. Start your day with the latest business and city news and enlightening guests with Nick Howard.
Good morning. It's coming up to 3 minutes past six. I'm Nick Howard. Thanks for joining me. In fact, you're such a valued listener to the programme, I'd love for you to keep listening so I can share all the latest news and insights from our amazing guests with you. If you can just click this link, that would be great. If you're anything like me, your email inbox is starting to fill up with messages from companies like this. They'd love to stay in touch with you, but they just need to let you know a few things, or read a new policy, or click a link for them. In 2 weeks' time, data protection rules are changing in the UK as the General Data Protection Regulation becomes active, and many firms are panicking about what that means. On this morning's programme, we'll be speaking to some of the major players and be asking what will actually change come the 25th of May. We'll examine if businesses, charities, and even the regulator itself will be ready by then. This is the Business Breakfast GDPR special on Friday, the 11th of May.
This is the Business Breakfast with Oanda on Jazz FM. Online trading, currency data, money transfers.
Now, these new GDPR rules are being enforced by the Information Commissioner's Office. So to understand what the changes will look like and how they'll be enforced, I've been speaking to them.
My name is Maureen Faulkner. I'm the Regional Manager in the ICO Scotland office here in Edinburgh.
Just to kick off, this is a big change in terms of data protection rules. Can you just break down for me what GDPR actually means?
I think first and foremost, I would say it's actually not that big a change. It has been the subject, I would say, of bad press, a lot of myths surrounding it, a lot of scaremongering, to be perfectly honest. But GDPR is the General Data Protection Regulation, and essentially Europe brought us our data protection regime through the first Data Protection Act 1998, which is still current. There was a realisation at that point, really, that the data protection regime that we had really wasn't fit for this electronic digital world that we have, and that we needed really to do something to bring it into the more digital age that we now experience. In order to do that, Europe came out with the General Data Protection Regulation.
And you said that this has suffered from scaremongering, but what will actually change for businesses and, you know, for the rest of us as well come the 25th then?
Well, for organisations under the data protection regime, they're called data controllers. So data controllers have all of the obligations and we as individuals get all the rights. I think that's quite a nice balance. I quite like that. The rights that we have as individuals are going to be enhanced. That means that we'll have a lot of the same that we've already enjoyed. There's one or two new ones, such as a so-called right to be forgotten. And for organisations, it's really about beefing up your current data protection regime, ensuring that you have good policies, good procedures, that you understand why you have personal data, because it is all about control. It's about giving control back to individuals in relation to their information, particularly in this digital age.
That sounds very nice, because we all prefer to have more rights than fewer. But in terms of what businesses are actually having to do, that's quite sketchy when it comes to, like, how do you give more rights to consumers over the data that you as a business actually hold?
Well, I think it's about making sure that when you're thinking about personal information of your customers, your service users, that you understand why you have that information. Too often, what we hear when we're out and about engaging with organisations, with data controllers, is, well, why do you have that? Well, just in case. Just in case is not a lawful purpose for processing personal information. So for businesses, it's really about doing almost an audit of what they currently have and just asking themselves, do we actually need this information? And then, is it within the bounds of expectation that your customers, your service users will actually expect that information to be used in this way? And what harm and detriment would there be to the individuals for you to use the information in that way? So for organisations, it really is just about waking up and saying, right, okay, for all of this time I've been using this personal information, I need to really think about why I'm doing this, and is it justified? Do I really need to have this?
they just have to do this. But when I'm speaking to businesses around the country on this, the thing that comes back continually is that there's a sense of fear and a sense of panic, particularly because the main headline when it comes to GDPR compliance is the big fines which are potentially on offer. What your former boss, the Information Commissioner, referred to as the big stick. What will actually happen? Will there be businesses getting fines after the 25th of May?
Well, businesses currently get fines under the current regime. When you look at the regulatory action that we've taken, then relative to the amount of regulatory action that we take, it's actually a very small proportion. We are not, contrary to what some less reputable news agencies might say, we are not sitting with a big list preparing and intelligence to gather information on organisations just ready on the 26th of May to start hitting them over the head with the so-called big stick of a fine. We are not that kind of regulator. We want to work with organisations. We want to encourage organisations to do the right thing, not because there's a looming fine hanging over their heads, but because it's actually good business sense.
Maureen Faulkner, head of the Information Commissioner's Office in Scotland, and we'll be hearing more from her later in the programme about how prepared the ICO itself is for GDPR. But first, where you're most likely to be hearing about the new rules is on the marketing, landing in our inboxes and on our doormats. John Mitcherson is Director of Policy and Compliance at the Direct Marketing Association. He says most firms shouldn't be panicking.
It has made some significant changes to some organisations, but the legislation is an evolution of our existing data protection laws. We've always had data protection laws in the UK since 1998 and even before. So if people were up to date and compliant with the existing regulations, then it was not a huge step.
Over the past couple of weeks, we've seen more, or I've certainly seen more and more companies contacting me, just checking, you know, whether I want to remain on newsletters and on various mailing lists. And so many people that I know are basically having great fun unsubscribing to everything. it's like a bonfire of the newsletters. Is this affecting your members? Surely they must be reporting back that their lists are shrinking, for better or for worse.
Yes, it will. If you email all of your people on your database asking them to re-opt in, you're going to get a small percentage of people actually making that. You know, there's a lot of people that won't see that message. They'll just automatically delete it without reading it. And then, of course, somebody has to actually really want to tick it in order to go ahead. So you're only going to get truly committed people doing that.
Some organisations suggest that people are receiving mail that they just haven't unsubscribed from because it takes effort.
Yes, no, that's true. Everybody in their email inbox, you know, every day you get a few things from companies you've dealt with in the past. And yes, you could hit the unsubscribe, but no, you just hit the delete, you know. So, you know, it's well worth cleaning it up. I mean, because it's of no use to the company sending those emails either if people aren't going to interact with it. But in a lot of cases, what I've heard, and of course it's only anecdotal, I don't have any research to back this up, that the response rates from the smaller file are exactly the same as they were from the much larger file that they were emailing previously. And it showed that they really were just sort of wasting their efforts on this data. People were very reluctant to remove large portions of their database. It's almost like, you know, the bigger your database, the better you're doing in a marketing department. But if only 15% of those are actually committed and engaged customers, you know, you've got to ask yourself why you're emailing all that other portion. So there is evidence to say that getting rid of people who haven't opened your emails for 2 years is actually a very good thing.
But I suppose the problem is that it takes exactly the same effort from that marketer's point of view to email 15,000 as 50,000. It's just 35,000 of those people will be annoyed getting those emails.
Yeah, that's true. The process of coming up to the standard of GDPR, nobody would have asked to go through this process, right? But anybody that has fully sort of committed to it and gone through it and updated all of their data collection statements, their privacy notices, and then justified the use of all their existing data. At the end of it, it's also clean and tidy. You know exactly what you've got. You know who you're dealing with because they've given you consent. You know who you're dealing with for any other legal reasons. And you know where all your data is and who has access to it. It's a very neat and tidy process. And people have been quite positive about the outcome, even if the process was quite hard work.
I mean, that seems, you know, reasonably positive then. I mean, are your members quite sanguine about the preparation, about the legislation coming in? Are they calm?
I don't think anybody that deals with data is entirely calm right now. I think if you've put in the prep, if you've done some work, you know, it became law 2 years ago. right? It's just if somebody wants to take legal action against you, they can't do that. So the 25th of May will come and go, and the ICO will be doing exactly what they're doing now, which is investigating the most serious problems, and that's it. Most of the companies that I speak to, if they come to me and they say, oh, I've got this terrible problem complying with GDPR, maybe you can help, and they explain the situation, and I think, that's not a problem with GDPR, that's a problem with the Data Protection Act. You're working in contravention of the Data Protection Act 1998, right? So you haven't worried about it for 20 years. Why are you suddenly worried now? You know, it's...
If that is the case, why will GDPR change that? You've said the legislation hasn't worked for 20 years. Why will things change now?
I wouldn't say the regulation hasn't worked. Most people are complying with the regulations. Certain companies may have let certain areas slip, but it hasn't exactly been causing a problem for anybody. Now that the rules are tightened up, I just think that there will be less room for people to make those kind of mistakes. Companies won't use data that's badly collected, and consumers will become more aware over time that if you interact on websites where everything's very clearly explained to you, and you suddenly go to a website where there's like, oh, there's no opt-in box here, and I can't see a link to a privacy policy, and it all seems, you know, that's instantly going to make you ask questions about, well, why is that one different to this one, which was being very clear about everything that's going on? I think it's a cultural shift in our use of data.
Director of Policy and Compliance at the Direct Marketing Association, John Mitchison.
On Jazz FM, this is The Business Breakfast,
where it is 18 minutes past six. I'm Nick Howard. You're listening to a Business Breakfast special as I examine the impact of GDPR as new data protection rules coming into force 2 weeks from now. You'll have already seen emails from firms worried they won't be able to contact you after the deadline, but there's another concerned group potentially missing out on the headlines.
I'm Mandy Johnson. I'm the Chief Executive of the Small Charities Coalition.
Charities, and particularly small ones without the budget to pay data experts to help them out, are worried they won't be ready for the rules, and that could have national consequences.
The Small Charities Coalition is nearly 9,500 small charities. We define small as having a turnover of less than £1 million. So that actually makes up 97% of the charity sector. Most charities are small. The sorts of charities that people will be familiar with that are generally small are things like lunch clubs for elderly people. Or I sit on the board of a small mental health charity that provides counselling services to people in our local area. It provides art classes and music classes and safe spaces that people can go to who are finding it difficult or who want to look after their mental health. So most small charities are local charities. They're the organisations that are integral to our country. They're the organisations that people go to when they're struggling with something, whether that be loneliness, mental health issues, physical health issues, disabilities. All of those sorts of things, generally speaking, are managed by small charities and, generally speaking, are managed by volunteers.
And come the 25th of May, we have GDPR coming into force. Mm-hmm. Just lay down for me what it might mean for your members, for small charities.
It means a lot of work that a lot of them haven't been expecting. So we know that the majority of charities have no paid members of staff at all. They're completely volunteer-led. And when you're run completely by volunteers, all of your volunteers are there to do is to serve the front line. They're not there necessarily to be data protection experts. So they've had a big, complicated regulation thrown at them. I don't think they've necessarily been given enough notice. And so some of them are panicking at the moment.
What does that actually look like in practice?
Well, we're getting lots of phone calls at the moment from charities who don't really understand exactly what it is that they have to do. There isn't clear enough guidance as to exactly what they have to do as a small charity. So we have charities trying to make sure they've got consent to contact everyone they've always contacted, because there is no small charity out there that wants to misuse someone's data or who wants to do anything wrong with their data. They're just trying to carry on as an organisation. But there's a lot of fear out there, because what we're being told is that there's large fines associated with this new regulation. And, you know, if a charity faces a fine, they can't carry on doing their work, because we work with the smallest charities that don't have big buffers of reserves in case large fines come their way.
I mean, do you feel that there will be charities who aren't compliant by the deadlines?
Well, from what we're hearing, it's almost impossible to be compliant. So I don't think any organisation will be completely 100% compliant by the 25th of May, whether they be a small charity or a large business.
I've been speaking to the ICO and they defend the information they've been putting out there. They defend the advice that they've been given to business, and they defend how available they've been to businesses, charities, organisations. What's your response to that?
Well, I think that's part of the problem. They're lumping in businesses and charities together. To put small businesses in the same pot as small charities doesn't make any sense, because small businesses have paid people there who do nothing but work for their organisation, whereas 91% of charities in this country have no one paid at all. They're completely volunteer-led, which means they may well have a full-time job and then they're trying to do their charity bit in the evenings or weekends when the ICO's helpline isn't open. The guidance that they're providing quite often is lumped together. So they're treating charities and businesses like they are the same types of organisation, and they're not.
What could happen here? I mean, are you seeing charities potentially stopping working?
I hope not. But for my organisation, certainly, I mean, we are a small charity ourselves. So the organisation that manages the coalition is small. We have 5 members of staff at the moment, and one of them has had to spend pretty much all of his time not doing the work that he usually does, just to make sure that we're as compliant as possible by the 25th of May. So he has stopped some of our charity work just to manage the complexities around GDPR to get us ready for the deadline.
Which presumably means one fewer person available to do the usual work that you're doing.
Exactly. And we're really lucky because we have 5 paid members of staff, so we're really unusual as a charity. And if you think about diverting a volunteer who would normally be on the front line supporting animals, children, people, the sorts of things that charities do, taking them away to focus on data protection means that there's one less person helping communities that really need it.
What's the flip side of this? From a usual sort of member of the public like me, will we actually be contacted by fewer charities after the 25th of May?
Well, small charities aren't the ones that have been contacting lots of people. And I really hope not, because the small charities who connect with their local communities do so in a mindful, legal way. And I really hope that they're not scared off from contacting the people who support them and who care for them. But I am seeing multiple emails from the larger charities saying, opt in now, otherwise we'll never be able to speak to you again. And small charities generally look up to the bigger charities to see what best practice is. So I really hope they don't copy all of that sort of behaviour, because it may well be that small charities stop asking for the money that they need because they're scared off by GDPR. I'd like real clarity. I'd like black and white answers of what charities can and can't do. Small charities don't have time for grey areas. They cannot employ lawyers most of the time because they can't afford them. So they need some guidance that is very clear about how they can best protect the data of those that they hold in a simple, proportionate way to the operations that they're running.
That was the CEO of the Small Charities Coalition, Mandy Johnson. I'll be putting her questions and concerns directly to the regulator in the hope they can be sorted quickly. But when I spoke to Maureen Faulkner, the ICO Scotland head, earlier, I asked her this. You've mentioned that there's been a lot of scaremongering around. Certainly when I'm speaking to smaller businesses particularly, and also small charities, that there is a lot of panic and fear around about what will happen after the 25th. Now, many of them are saying that the ICO hasn't done enough to actually educate businesses on, you know, what will actually take place, what the regulatory changes will mean. I'm sure that you're going to say that you know, you've been doing open days, you've been talking to businesses and things, but what will actually happen to them after the 25th?
Well, I would say to go onto our website, that's ico.org.uk, and you will find a page on our website specifically for micro businesses. So that's for all of the small businesses out there. Now, the big problem that we have is that we currently have a data protection bill going through the UK Parliament, so we actually don't have a finished regime. We've got GDPR, and the majority of GDPR is fixed in stone, that's it. But like I said, the fact that we actually don't have a fixed regime yet has made it very difficult for us as a regulator to be telling people, well, this is what you have to do, because, as I said, it's not absolutely fixed yet.
Well, it is also difficult for businesses, isn't it, that they've got a deadline but not the rules in place to know what to comply
to. Well, no, the rules are in place. You know, GDPR is there. So the very first thing that the organisations need to be thinking about is, well, look at what personal data I'm actually using and thinking about why you're holding that. Then you need to think about the use of that personal data. So do I actually need all of the bits of personal information that I have in order to provide the service that I'm providing? And then you need to be thinking about, okay, so what do I do then for individuals that want to exercise some of their rights under GDPR? There are no absolute rights, with the exception of stopping direct marketing. There are no absolute rights under GDPR. They're all qualified. Although an individual may want to exercise, let's say, the right to be forgotten, one of the new rights, then it's very much qualified under certain circumstances.
I mean, this does sound, as you say, it's very case specific to different businesses. That also presumably puts a large load onto the ICO itself. Mm. I mean, I know you've been recruiting in terms of GDPR, but is the ICO actually prepared for the 25th?
That is a very, very good question. And you're right, recruitment is a big part, because the GDPR will give us more activity and we need more bodies to be able to carry out that activity. And of course, we're seeing that just now within the ICO with the amount of inquiries that we're getting right across the board. We are all at full capacity trying to deal with inquiries. So we would ask members of the public and organisations to bear with us while we get in preparation ourselves and get our guidance out there to help others.
When you say you're at full capacity now, I know last year the head of the ICO, Elizabeth Denham, said that you were recruiting 200 caseworkers just for GDPR. Are they all now in place?
It's a phased approach that we're taking to this. We couldn't possibly, you can imagine, if we got 200 new bodies into the organisation all at once. So it's a phased approach, and that will continue. Our recruitment will continue over the next year at least, and then we'll take cognizance of where we are at that point.
But some of our sources are suggesting that it is difficult for the ICO to recruit or to keep its new recruits because salaries are lower than they are in the private sector by as much as double what the ICO is paying in some situations. I mean, is that actually the case?
Well, I think you don't work in the public sector to get money, Nick, I'm afraid. We all know that. But I will say that Elizabeth has managed to secure a very, very good pay deal for us over the next 3 years, which hopefully will create a better enhancement for people to come and join us. And yes, certainly, I mean, GDPR is coming in, so people at the ICO that have been working on data protection are a sought-after commodity out there in the private sector in particular. But certainly with the new pay deal, and certainly with more enhancements around that in terms of flexi time, etc., I think that the ICO is a great place to work for. And you might think, oh, she's going to say that anyway, isn't she? But it is.
I'm pleased that the ICO is such a good place to work. But are you confident? You're suggesting that the team will be in place over the coming year. But are you comfortable with your team that is ready to deal with the deadline of the 25th?
Yes, categorically, yes. I don't say that it's going to be easy. We've seen that over the past 6 months in particular. We have a lot of inquiries coming into us. People want us to come out and speak to either their organisation or out in conferences or, you know, wider seminars. We have a self-assessment toolkit specifically for small organisations to go through so that they can test where they are in terms of their current data protection compliance. Now, are they all going to be compliant by the 25th of May? Realistically, no. But what we want to see is a planned, organised progress that people have a timeline. So it will be ongoing, Nick. It definitely will be ongoing.
Sure. So on that 25th into the 26th, it won't be a case of, you know, a panic stations of fines directly after. It's more about having a plan afterwards, something of a grace period.
Yes. I wouldn't call it a grace period. You know, the law is the law and you have to comply. But what we want to see is organisations have been thinking about this seriously. Organisations have done an assessment of where they are currently and what they intend to put in place. If they haven't got it ready on the 25th of May, absolutely, what are they going to put in place? What's the timeline? And it's not just, oh, well, I'll get around to it. What you're looking for here is a formal plan that by this date, I'll have this part in place. By that date, I'll have that part in place. For me, if organisations are going to be panicking at this moment in time, there's two things that they need to really think about. First and foremost is that fair processing. They need to get that bit right. without that foundation, you can do all of the other compliance, but it will not sit firmly on a good, solid foundation. The second big issue is the accountability. So it's not just about compliance come the 25th of May, it's about evidencing that compliance through accountability. And that means you get your procedures up to date, you get your processes up to date, you make sure that you can evidence all of your compliance and hopefully get those two things right, and the rest will actually all start to fall into place.
That's Maureen Falconer, head of the Information Commissioner's Office in Scotland. Of course, how we talk about data is often negative. The headlines focus on stolen data, data breaches, data used against you. And data protection rules can be worrying. Some firms are pulling back from data collection altogether because it's seen as too much of a hassle or a risk. So it is worth pointing out some of the benefits of data collection. This is Kavya Korshik, a data expert and enthusiast.
I initially got interested in data when I used to work in politics and saw how we can use data to micro-target voters who say things like, this politician doesn't represent me. Now I work within Sage Ocean, which is an initiative looking at how we can empower social scientists to use big data and data science.
She's positive about the impact data is having on the world and of GDPR.
Microsoft did some research around, I think it was around 2015, and realised that the average attention span of a normal customer has gone down from about 11 seconds now to 8 seconds, and that's going down every few years. When we have less and less time to grab someone's attention, that's where that personalisation is actually an amazing thing. You can ask people who use services like Spotify, and they'll say they love their Discover Weekly playlist. They love the fact that this company has their data and is able to work out a personalised playlist for them. There's a lot of noise out there in terms of advertising, and data can be used in this exceptional way to fine-tune that noise into something that you're actually interested in hearing. There's a lot of noise out there about how data is evil and only used by evil corporates. And actually, what we need to do a lot more of is equip social scientists and equip the people who are working within academic research with skills on how to use and harness data to find out things in social behaviour, and then to use that research that they have learned to empower communities and actually use data for good. There are a lot of initiatives out there, Sage Ocean being one of them, working on upskilling researchers and building collaborative communities for big data. You've also got other initiatives where you've got data researchers getting together and using public access data to find out why there are trends of homelessness and what factors are contributing that to find solutions to homelessness. So we need to stop seeing data as this horrible, evil thing that corporates are doing for marketing, and stop associating it to Cambridge Analytica, and actually look into the power of what data can do for good and how, as communities, we can harness that.
Data expert Kavya Korshik from Sage Ocean. There's plenty more to say on GDPR, but that's all the time we have this morning. However, along with the rest of the team, I'll be bringing you more details and analysis in the run-up to the 25th of May deadline and beyond. As Kavya told me, that's really just the beginning of GDPR and not the end. The FTSE opens at 8 o'clock after closing at 7,700. That's 38 points higher. It is 25 to 7 on Friday, the 11th of May. A little late this morning, Nigel is waiting in the wings. The Business Breakfast returns as normal on Monday morning at 6. But for more news, head to the Jazz FM website at any time. That's jazzfm.com/news. You can also listen to this programme again there. Thank you very much for joining me. Have a great weekend. I'm Nick Howard. Jazz FM Breakfast with Nigel Williams is next.
The Business Breakfast on Jazz FM with Oanda. Online trading, currency data, money transfers.